From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of August, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson from TGM. That's the elevator that's owned by Growmark FS in Champaign County. Then we'll turn our attention to legislative progress as it's related to farm policy. I caught up with the president of the National Corn Growers Association, Kenny Hartman Jr. He also happens to be a farmer from the state of Illinois. And then as we make our way through the end of the program, we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Greg Johnson from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Greg. Thanks much for being with us. My first question for you is, what did farmers say yesterday when they saw the 188 plus for the yield and all the extra acres and that billion bushels more of production for the year?
Yeah, the acreage number was kind of under the radar. I think the farmers were so focused on that 188.8 number versus the 181 from a month ago that that's what they were talking about. But equally as important was the extra 2.1 million acres and, you know, trying to explain to them that, you know, the USDA is now using FSA reported data in the August report, which is something that hasn't happened before. So these acres are really there, according to FSA. It's just that some in past years, we haven't gotten that data until the September-October reports. So I guess, you know, the bad news is in, I guess, you know, not that it can't go up a little bit more, but I think most of the acres have been reported. And so that acreage number is probably not going to change very much from here on out now that we've got that FSA data in there. The yield, I guess, now is the question mark. Will that number, it could possibly go up, but more than likely go down in subsequent reports. We're hearing a lot of stories about tip back in certain areas, and you know, and that's all true. So we are going to probably shave some bushels off of the crop, but we're shaving it off of a very, very, very high number. So even if you shave a bushel or two off, your carryout is still going to have a two in front of it for the carryout. So it's hard to find anything real positive out of this report yesterday. It's just going to be a big crop, and we're going to have to chew through it. And it's going to take a little while before we can, you know, start talking about carryouts, carryouts in the 1.5, 1.6 range, because what the government did yesterday as well, and I understand why, whenever they increase production, their model assumes that you increase demand as well. But are we really going to increase cattle feed demand when the number of cattle continues to dwindle month to month? We're still not seeing a recovery in cattle numbers. So, you know, can we make that up in hogs and chickens? Possibly, but you know, it's a stretch to think that exports are going to go up as much as they did, ethanol numbers to go up as much as what the USDA said, and then cattle numbers to, or feed numbers to go up as well. So we're just going to have to chew through a lot of this. It's going to take some time, and the market's going to have to disincent farmers from planting a lot of corn next year. And then the best way to do that is to keep the price relatively low.
Yeah, they added 250 million bushels to the feed and residual number. I suppose that would mean there would be a lot of well-marbled cattle out there. or maybe it'll just attest to the fat cattle numbers. I'm not sure which way you want to put that. Here's one that I found of interest, and I think it probably some will find this of interest as well. It has nothing to do with the numbers, but I did make note that yesterday's report was signed by the current Secretary of Agriculture. So Brooke Rollins signed that report. I didn't know whether she would be in town or not. Usually secretaries do. Oftentimes the reports come out when they're traveling, and so they're signed by an undersecretary. I thought this was an important one because it was the first crop production report that she will have seen, and the numbers were signed off once they were turned over to her by the World Ag Outlook Board. And USDA NAS. So the numbers have the stamp of approval by the secretary. They always do. You said there wasn't anything, and this would be in the corn numbers, that we would find that was really good. The soybean numbers on the other side of that ledger had to go down simply because so many acres shifted from one crop to the other. So that had shown some resilience yesterday, really, in the soybeans. Not so much today, but can they continue to go higher?
They can. Again, the acreage number is figured in, so that, you know, that's part of the rally that we've already seen. So now we go back to talking about yield, and corn is far enough along that, yes, we can have a little bit of tip back and maybe some lighter test weight if we don't get much rain in August. But the soybeans are really dependent upon rain in August, and we're almost halfway through the month, and we've had less than a tenth of an inch of rain here in Champaign, Illinois. And I know there's other areas that are similarly dry. Not much rain in the forecast the rest of this week or next week. Now, you know, how long can the soybean crop hold on? It still looks good. And so maybe we can pull a rabbit out of our hat. But if we don't get some rain, you could expect soybean yields to drop in subsequent reports. And this gets back to corn as well. The reason that number, that 188.8 number came out, and the bean number came out at 53.6, is it's all based off of the weekly crop condition reports as well as infrared, which basically tells you the vegetative health of the plant. So we've got a lot of green plants out there, but that doesn't really tell you how the pollination went, how the kernel fill went. So, you know, farmers are trying to say that it's not as good as what it looks like from the roadside, and that could very well be true. So I guess my point is, I think we could see both the corn and bean yield drop in subsequent reports, but the corn yield, even if it drops 2 or 3 bushels of the acre, is still a huge number. And so, you know, a bean number, you know, is relatively tight. And so now if you take a bushel or two off of the bean yield, things are extremely tight. Just looking at the price performance this year, for example, this is very surprising. Corn has lost 10% of its value in price since the first of the year, whereas with the rally yesterday, soybeans are actually up for the month, just slightly, or up for the year, I'm sorry, slightly. I mean, maybe less than a tenth of a percent, but at least they're higher, whereas the corn has lost 10% of its value. And I think at the beginning of the year, if you would have asked people, you know, which commodity has the better potential, I think most people would have said corn. So kind of a surprising change of events here over the last several months.
Yeah, the shoe waiting to drop in that is the relationship that the United States has with China and whether or not they will decide to buy. How worried do you suppose, or maybe better said, when will the trade decide that is a real issue?
I think you're already starting to see that. You're starting to see fall basis levels for soybeans weaken, widen out. If this trade deal does not get done in the next 30 days before bean harvest starts, where are those beans going to go? We're going to have to store beans, and the country just doesn't have enough room to store an entire crop of corn and an entire crop of beans. I think the trade is starting to see that and think about that. You're starting to see new crop bean basis levels fall, and that will continue to happen if we don't get a trade deal worked out. And the scary part is the 90-day extension sounds all well and good, but if they don't get something worked out until the latter end of that 90-day extension, harvest will have been over and China will not have bought any beans as of that point, and basis levels will be under pressure, especially soybean basis.
So at this point, it is about storage, and suddenly you have not only a record crop, which we were looking at, but a really monstrous corn crop and a bean crop that's not going to move. So there'll be a lot of corn on the ground, I suppose, and you'll all be worried about how and where you're going to store this and how you can keep it. Beans are harder to keep, too, than corn.
Exactly. Now, the one thing we are reminding producers is there is very good carry in the market. Right now, cash corn is in the 360s, but if you can hold on to it till July, it's worth 416. That's a 50-cent cash carry in the market. Now, you know, if you have to pay DP charges, you're probably going to give up 40 of that 50 cents, but If you've got your own bins, you could sell corn for July delivery today and pick up 49 to 50 cents. On soybeans, fall beans are 10.02 today. July price is 10.66. You can pick up 64 cents cash. Now, there's interest charges on that, so it's not a free 64 cents. But the point is, there's very good carry in the market. But the only way to lock in that carry is to sell the beans or the corn for June, July delivery. If you wait until June, July, maybe the price, you know, falls back down again and to where we are today. And so you give up that carry. So, you know, something to think about. I'm not saying that corn prices and bean prices can't go higher, but at some point you may want to lock in that carry, especially if you have your own storage.
Indeed. Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you for Commodity Week this week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org. Now let's turn our attention to a legislative update. I spoke with Kenny Hartman Jr. He's the current president of the National Corn Growers Association and an Illinois farmer. I asked him to tell me about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and how corn growers across the nation, particularly the NCGA, sees it and the perspective they have on the changes it made in what's not quite yet a farm bill, but certainly has been put into law.
Well, we're definitely happy with the One Big Beautiful Bill when it comes to the tax side. You know, that basically helps us with some of the tax policy when it comes to inheritance tax. You know, that increases that up to $15 billion, which the way land values are be, we really need that. You know, the other part of that is the bonus depreciation is there now for many years through that for that process. And then there's been some other, you know, tax policies that have helped us as far as sole proprietorships, as far as competition, comparative to corporations, that a sole proprietor can get some of them tax deductions there too. Then the other part of it that we really needed was that Title I when it comes to updating PLC and ARC program. That was very important, but obviously we still don't have a full farm bill. You know, we definitely want to get a full farm bill done that needs to be done by the end of the year. And you're talking about a 2.0 or a slim farm bill, and that's, you know, some of the things we need as far as conservation and some of these other areas that big beautiful bill didn't touch, and we need to basically work to get that done.
How quickly do you suppose Congress can manage to get a skinny farm bill passed and signed into law?
Well, we have talked to the four corners. You know, we've talked to Bozeman, we've talked to GT Thompson both, and we've talked to the minor leaders of the Ag Committee, and they're saying that they're going to work together and try to get something done. So we're hoping that needs to get done just because we still don't have an official farm bill.
How is it that the corn growers see the food and feeding program cuts that were included in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act?
Well, obviously there's concerns there, and we've always promoted a bipartisan farm bill. We definitely want, you know, the Republicans and Democrats working together. So we're hoping that in the future that we can get something done, that they keep working together, because obviously we're concerned with, you know, 5 years from now, the next farm bill too, once we get something done here.
What is it that you're working on related to biofuels, and how do you feel about the Petroleum Institute backing away from some of the agreements that have been made?
Well, we are definitely trying to get this E15 bill passed, yet we feel like, you know, we almost had it passed last December. We've had challenges trying to get it done throughout the year. We're definitely working with the oil industry, you know, working for them to help us support the E15, and we're hoping that we can still get something done there. I know, you know, Fisher Capital bill is very alive, and the Fisher's working on this. Senator Thune is definitely working on this. And then on the House side, we've got our champions on the House working. So we're hoping that we can find a carrier. You know, the president has stated that, you know, he's all for E15. You know, he actually signed that back in 19. And then the judicial system said it wasn't done the right way, so it was taken away. So, I mean, he's supportive of it. We've got the House and the Senate on you know, the Republicans and the Democrats say they're all supporting it. We just need to get a carrier to finish it up because, you know, our retailers want to put E15 pumps in, but until they got a guarantee, you know, the problem is they're just not ready to do that.
Anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to talk about?
The other thing that we're working on very strongly is concerns with MAHA. You know, we were frustrated when we seen that first report. We didn't have much input, any input on that. And they had atrazine and glyphosate in there. We can't farm without our pesticides, our tools in the toolbox, as I say. So we're very concerned with that. The administration has reached out to us since then. We've been having a lot of discussions with them, and we're hoping that next report that comes out in August is going to not have some of the concerns that they put in that first one with pesticides, because, you know, EPA has been working for many, many years on registering these products. We've got probably the most safest food in the world. EPA is very safe with what they're doing, and we feel like we don't need to reinvent the wheel and just support them on their reviews and get this done, that pesticides are safe in the United States.
Kenny Hartman is the president of the National Corn Growers Association and an Illinois farmer. Drew Lerner is with us now from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us. Let's get right into this. In my part of the world, while the grass is still green and things still feel pretty good, it's gotten dry in the month of August. I think you told us that was probably going to happen. Is there any rain for the second half of this month?
Yeah, there is some rain. It's going to be a pretty classic August, in my opinion. And what I mean by classic August is it's the month that really has a hard time generating enough rain to counter evaporation. We see this in many, many years. And for those who are out in the fields all the time, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because typically when we get to the end of the summer, it still rains periodically, but we usually have more sunny days than rainy days, and the temperatures are so much warmer that we evaporate moisture out quicker than we put back. And so net drying is pretty classic for the month of August, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing happen here right now. The moisture profile is declining across Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and maybe a few neighboring areas in Missouri. It's not a crisis because subsoil moisture is still pretty darn good in most of those areas. There are some exceptions. Now, farther to the south in the Delta, the Tennessee River Basin, we are looking at short and very short top and subsoil moisture. So the stress levels down that way are much more significant than they are in the heart of the central and eastern Midwest. And then, of course, places like northern Missouri and Iowa and northwestern Illinois, Wisconsin, back to the Dakotas, they're still plenty wet from all the storms that have occurred in recent weeks. So that's not an issue for them. But in answer to your question, I think as we go forward through the balance of this month, we will continue to have rain come periodically, but it is expected to be sporadic and a bit lighter than usual at times in the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest and down into the Delta and the western Tennessee Basin as well. Now, the tropics will be the key to this. And watching the tropics will determine what's going to happen in the Midwest. Now, obviously, if we get a storm, a tropical storm that moves into the Gulf of America, we might block moisture from coming up into the Midwest, unless, of course, the storm literally comes into the Delta in the Midwest, and then, of course, it rains. But for instance, Tropical Storm Erin, that storm works its way off the east coast of the United States, it's likely to limit rain across parts of the eastern Midwest for a little while, depending on how close to the coast it gets. Now, if it's out by Bermuda, we'll probably have some timely rain that will be lighter than usual, but there will still be an opportunity for moisture. And I kind of think that's the road we're going to go down. So temperatures next week are expected to be a little bit cooler biased, and so that's going to help conserve the moisture just a tad bit, slow down the evaporation rates, and allow the crops to take full advantage of what shower activity does occur. So in answer to your question, I think we're still going to have pockets of dryness through the balance of August, but there will be some timely rain that will come and go.
We've been watching the Canadian prairies. Any changes there?
Yes. Since we talked last, generalized rain occurred. We had some rain about this time last week, and then in the following weekend, there was a much larger storm system that came across the region. The eastern part of the prairies, including Saskatchewan and Manitoba in particular, you got a good general soaking. I think one of the regions that had been driest for the longest period of time reported 1 to 2.5 inches of rain in a general sense. Unfortunately for those folks, though, the majority of their crops had already moved through reproduction, especially those areas that were drought-stricken. They were bolted into the finish line much earlier than usual. That includes some of the wheat and barley and oats that's produced in some of that region. Canola had just finished flowering. Flowering was beginning to fill, so the producers are happy with the fact that it rained at this point, even though they would have been happier if it rained before flowering had begun. But because there's moisture now in the soil, most of the crop will fill, and we'll see bigger bigger sized grain coming out of the region, and that will help improve the bottom line a little bit. Corn and soybeans and flax are the late season crops up that way, and they will all benefit from the rain. There is more rain in the pipeline, but it will probably be a week or 10 days away before we get started with that.
Is there any more to discuss in Europe?
Europe, yeah. Unfortunately, in Europe, they are in the midst of another heat wave. The last heat wave that impacted Western Europe was the very tail end of June and early July. And we saw temperatures at that time get up over 100 in Germany and central France, with 90s up in UK. We're kind of doing that again. It hasn't got quite that hot yet, but we're only into the second day of the heat wave. And we do expect France and the UK and parts of Germany to see temperatures in the 90s pretty routinely. I think 100 degree temperatures will probably stop in the southern half of France. But it hasn't rained much in these areas for quite a while, in France in particular, and the southern parts of United Kingdom. That area has been really dry for quite a while, and they will see the hottest temperatures. Germany and areas farther to the east into the Baltic states and Poland and western Ukraine, most of that area has had good rainfall in recent weeks. So this drying and the heat isn't going to be a big deal for them. But France and also in the south part of Europe, the lower Danube River basin, will take it on the chin and experience a further pressure downward on production. What I find most fascinating about this, though, is that it has been about 45 days since the last heat wave impacted Europe. And this is that same 45-day cycle that I think I've mentioned to you in the past, where in North America, it's not a heat wave at 45 days, but it's a cool air mass that comes back every 45 days. And we were watching this pretty closely. And I think with seeing what's happening in Europe right now just kind of reinforces what we're thinking will happen in the United States and Canada. And what that translates to is probably a shot of coolness in early September, and again, about the third week of September. So we're going to be watching that. I don't think it's going to be a threat to the immature crops out there in the U.S., but in Canada, there may be a little frost and freeze in that first week of September, so we'll need to watch for that.
Hey, thanks much. I appreciate it.
All right, have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world, online at willag.org. I'm Extensions Todd Gleason.